Welcome to this week's Walnut Wednesday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. On this week's Walnut Wednesday feature report, Taylor Charlstrom will talk about the importance of foliar sampling for nutrients. And Vicki Boyd will join us later with a report on the California Avocado Commission's perspective of this year's harvest. And I'll have regional and national agricultural news beginning with regional ag news right after this.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
According to a report released by the California Department of Food and Agriculture, there are close to 70,000 farms and ranches in the state. The agency also proclaims that California's agricultural output produces around $50 billion in cash receipts each year. California's agricultural industry is supported by hundreds of thousands of farm workers. Farm safety for these workers is an important topic, as the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reports that as recently as 2019, there were 573 fatalities in the agricultural sector for the country. This figure makes farming one of the most dangerous occupations. In addition to fatal accidents and serious injuries, farmers and agricultural workers can be at risk of exposure to a number of airborne hazards that could negatively impact their health. These include everything from mold, bacteria, and viruses to dusts, including combustible dust, fumes, insecticides, fungicides, disinfectants, and fertilizers, to name just a few. Exposure to various hazardous gases can also be a risk. These could include elevated concentrations of carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, methane, hydrogen sulfide, ammonia, and other gases. To raise the awareness of the need to protect farm workers, National Farm Safety and Health Week takes place on the third week of September, according to Michael Chapman, laboratory manager at LA Testing's Huntington Beach facility. At LA Testing, they support the efforts of this annual observance and provide resources all year long to safeguard agricultural workers. California Environmental and Industrial Hygiene Laboratories offer testing services and sampling supplies for mold, bacteria, viruses, particulates, gases, combustible dust, and a wide range of pesticides. LA Testing even provides air monitoring instruments and a complete line of personal protective equipment. LA Testing is California's leading laboratory for indoor environmental quality testing of asbestos, mold, lead, VOCs, formaldehyde, soot, char, ash, and smoke damage, particulates, and other chemicals. They also offer a full range of air sampling and investigative equipment to professionals and the general public. As we just celebrated National Guacamole Day, in 2021, California had 46,700 bearing acres of avocados. That's 90% of the acres in the U.S. 134,840 tons were harvested, again, 90% of the avocado acres in the U.S. The value was $327.4 million. Grower and shippers were on watch recently following reports that Tropical Storm K had made landfall in Mexico. Categorized as a Category 1 storm, it reportedly hit along the west coast of the central Baja California Peninsula starting last Thursday afternoon. In turn, this had raised concerns over the potential of flooding there, as well as other parts of California, parts of which have undergone a heat wave with temperatures above 100 degrees for multiple days. So what does that mean for growing areas in the region? The current regional green onion forecast will be delayed as a result of the wet conditions there, and there is potential for crop damage if heavy downpours impact fields, according to Mark McBride of Coastline Family Farms. While he notes that the rain may either disrupt or delay early desert plantings, he won't be able to assess the storm's impact until it sees exactly how much rain was received in all areas. In berries, the storm disrupted raspberry production in Baja California, and the strong winds did damage to some of the tunnels. But the growers see the heavy rains as beneficial. The rain is needed and helped to replenish aquifers, which alleviate the effects of extended drought, according to Janice Honneberg, president of Sunbelt Incorporated. Nature Ripe, a global producer of fresh berries, introduces a new line of frozen fruit products available on October 17th in select retailers across the Mid and Northeast. The same berries consumers have come to expect from Nature Ripe Farms are now available in the frozen food aisle. Retailers can now offer Nature Ripe branded bags of frozen blueberries, strawberries, raspberries, blackberries, grapes, and cherries, as well as organic blueberries and strawberries. They will also find new blends like Berry Mix, Very Cherry Berry, and Mango Berry. All these offerings are ready to eat and do not contain preservatives. These new frozen packages are easy to merchandise, as the gusseted freestanding poly bags keep the product upright in a retail store's display freezer. They also come in different sizes, from 10 ounces up to 3 pounds, to meet a range of consumer demands. The smaller 10 and 12 ounce pack sizes make it easier for shoppers to mix and match, increasing overall basket size. The larger 3 pound pack appeals to bulk shoppers, larger families, and those that are freezer stocking. Nature Ripe also introduced unique frozen blends, including Mango Berry and Morning Blend, which is a mix of mango, banana, and pineapple. These blends are perfect for shoppers looking for a greater variety in their frozen fruit options. As part of this new product launch, Nature Ripe is also making popular recipes available for shoppers to spark frozen food inspiration, such as berry citrus scones, mango dump cake, kiwi keem lime sorbet, blueberry chipotle barbecue sauce, berry cream soda, and berry lemony bars.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Taylor Chalstrom is in now with this week's Walnut Wednesday report. He talks about the importance of foliar sampling for nutrients.
Foliar tissue analysis is a test that determines essential or toxic levels of nutrients in leaves, and is one of the most efficient ways of doing so. It's used as a means of 1. Detecting tree response to fertilizer programs, 2. Determining nutrient element deficiencies or toxicities, and 3. Estimating fertilization needs prior to nutrient deficiency symptoms. All tree nut growers are recommended to take a foliar tissue analysis each year, including walnut growers. The results of a leaf analysis can't be better than the sampling and analytical procedures used. Therefore, properly sampling and a reputable laboratory are an integral and vital part of foliar analysis. Stanislaus County Cooperative Extension Farm Advisor Kerry Arnold recently explained in an educational video the importance of foliar analysis.
Instead of asking what the tree needs by the content in the soil or the amount of fertilizer applied, you ask the tree directly about its current nutrient levels. Nutrient concentrations tend to fluctuate during the season, but stabilize in July. Therefore, experts suggest collecting tissue samples in July when nut development is well underway. To collect your samples, walk around your field at random. Do not incorporate more than 40 acres in one sample. Leaf nutrient concentrations also depend on the location of the leaf in the canopy. For walnuts, pull terminal leaflets. Pull leaves from all four quadrants of the tree. Pick a sun-exposed, non-fruiting spur or branch about 6 feet off the ground. You want to make sure trees you sample from are at least 40 feet apart. About 50 leaflets are required per sample. Avoid collecting from sick, injured, or stunted trees.
The leaves should be collected in plastic or paper bags and stored in a portable ice chest, ideally. Leaves in plastic bags must be kept cool and protected from direct sunlight, and the bags should be labeled with the following information: date, orchard location, and tree location per UC guidelines. The best time to take the leaf sample is during June and July. At this time, most leaves are fully developed and their nutrient concentration is stable. However, samples may be taken in August or September, but interpretation of the results must be adjusted for seasonal effect.
July leaf tissue samples are an excellent resource to determine next year's fertilization practices. When you get the results, you can compare them to standards developed by the University of California. The critical leaf value is the point at which your orchard will suffer yield losses. If your orchard is at that point, you should consider an aggressive fertilization program. The sufficient range is the target. If your samples come back in this range, plan to fertilize based on crop removal rates. If you are above the sufficiency range, congratulations! You can reduce the amount of fertilization you do for a year or two. Be wary of zinc. The metal binds to leaf cuticles, giving artificially high leaf values. This zinc cannot be washed off.
Leaf tissue analysis is not a substitute for visual observations, but is simply a tool to use for a sound fertilization program. In most cases, it will confirm toxicity and/or nutritional problems in the orchard.
For more information, visit the California Department of Food and Agriculture's California Crop Fertilization Guidelines website.
For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture has filed an administrative complaint against Burbano Corporation, doing business as Casabella Farms, for alleged violations of the Perishable Agricultural Commodities Act. The company, operating from Florida, allegedly failed to make payment promptly to four produce sellers in the amount of $385,084 from March 2020 through September 2021. Burbano will have an opportunity to request a hearing. Should USDA find that the company committed repeated and flagrant violations, it would be barred from the produce industry as a licensee for 3 years or 2 years with the posting of a USDA-approved surety bond. Furthermore, its principals could not be employed or affiliated with any PACA licensing for 2 years or 1 year with the posting of a USDA-approved surety bond. Inflation has been accelerating since early fall of 2021. Drought conditions are severe, consumer confidence is low, and grocery patterns are switching very rapidly. IRI, 210 Analytics, and IFPA remain committed to bringing the industry the latest analysis and fresh produce, according to Joe Watson, Vice President of Retail, Food Service, and Wholesale for IFT, the August Marketplace. Food inflation remains extremely high, and consumers are feeling the pain. They're making changes in their restaurant engagements as well as at their grocery store. That according to the August IRI survey of primary grocery shoppers. The survey shows 81% of American households bought at least one restaurant meal in August, with the highest restaurant penetration among Gen X at 85%. 54% ordered meals to go. Half of American households have eaten restaurant food on premise. Additionally, 20% have ordered from a restaurant for home delivery. Home delivery is much more popular among Gen Z and younger millennials at 31%. When purchasing groceries, 85% of consumers shopped in person. Online shopping was near equally divided between click and collect at 9% and home delivery at 6%. Delivery is more prevalent among Gen Z and younger millennials at 13%. August 2022 fresh produce sales reached $5.9 billion, surpassing a record set the previous year by 4.2%. The value of all U.S. exports has grown at an average annual rate of 6% since 2002 and reached a record high of $1.4 trillion in fiscal year 2021. The USDA says while the bulk of U.S. exports consists of industrial supplies and capital goods, agriculture's share of total U.S. exports has steadily increased. Between fiscal years 2002 and 2021, the value of agricultural exports rose by an average of 11% every year, exceeding the overall rate of increase for the rest of American exports. In 2021, ag producers accounted for 12% of the total value, up from 9% in 2002. Even as total U.S. exports dropped 12% when COVID-19 began in fiscal year 2020, ag exports stayed steady because of surging shipments of soybeans, corn, and pork to China. In 2021, total U.S. exports rebounded by 14% as global demand recovered from trade restrictions that were relaxed. And last week, more than 250 members of the National Farmers Union met in Washington, D.C. from all over the country to advocate for family farmers. During the week, members attended hundreds of congressional meetings, met with over a dozen federal agencies, and directly participated in discussions with Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack, Commodity Futures Trading Commission Chair Rostin Benham, and many others. It's been an incredibly productive and successful fly-in for National Farmers Union, according to NFU President Rob LaRue. He says it's a testament to the passion and interest of their members that they're willing to take time away from their farm and come to Washington and build bipartisan support for fairness for farmers and their farm bill priorities. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack says National Farmers Union in many respects has been the architect and the designer of the work the Biden administration is doing in terms of farm country and agriculture. The White House is hosting a conference on hunger, nutrition, and health. USA Ag News reporter Rod Bain reports.
Coming up September 28th, the White House Conference on Hunger, Nutrition, and Health, a gathering of stakeholders and public citizens designed to create strategies to meet goals of ending hunger and reducing diet-related diseases by the year 2030.
This is going to be a very robust effort. Having looked at the proposed agenda and the people that are participating in the agenda, I can tell you that it's going to be a very busy day, a very packed day, a very long but a very substantive day.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says this isn't the first time such a conference was held. The first and only White House conference on hunger, nutrition, and health took place in 1969.
There were a set of recommendations, but the reality is, in some cases, it took a number of years before many of those recommendations became part of the fabric of what we do today.
One example is the Women, Infants, and Children Program, available through the Agriculture Department since 1972, when it was initially authorized as a two-year pilot program.
And now we're in a position of asking some serious questions about how do we expand access, how do we ensure that the 50% of folks who are eligible for WIC access WIC. We're going through a rebranding process at WIC. How do we make sure that the bonus payments that were part of the pandemic assistance can continue because they were popular and necessary? A lot of opportunity here.
It will be among the many subjects discussed and hopefully resolutions crafted going forward within the White House Conference on Hunger, Nutrition, and Health. As Secretary Vilsack expresses,
I think people are quite serious about coming out of this conference with a roadmap that will indicate that while we have done a lot of work, there is still work to be done.
He elaborates.
Part of what will come out of this conference is a strategic plan, if you will, that is in the process of being formulated. There will also be additional recommendations coming from folks who are presenting on a variety of aspects. When you get into the issue of hunger and nutrition, you get into an area that is pretty complex, a lot more complex than people realize. And there are a lot of voices, there's a lot of interest, and it is also encouraging organizations and groups to also think internally about, well, okay, what would we do? What should we advocate? What should we advance?
More details about the upcoming White House Conference on Hunger, Nutrition, and Health is available at the following web address, www.whitehouse.gov/hunger-health-conference, all one word. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The Department of Agriculture has reported that food insecurity declined slightly overall in 2021. Farm News reporter Michael Clements shares more from the American Farm Bureau Federation.
USDA's Economic Research Service just released its annual report on food security, showing a slight improvement in 2021 from 2020. American Farm Bureau Federation senior economist Veronica Nye explains the data.
Their study reveals that food insecurity in the United States declined relative to 2020. About 13.5 million households in the United States, or 10.2% of the population, faced food insecurity, compared to 2020 in the height of the COVID pandemic, when 10.5% of the population, or 13.8 million U.S. households, faced insecurity at some point during the year.
However, Nye says regional differences show a different story.
Despite the fact that we saw an overall decline in the number of families that were food insecure in the United States last year, it wasn't true across all regions. In the Midwest, we actually saw an increase in the percentage of households that were insecure from 9.5% climbing to 9.9%. We also saw an increase in the West, where we went from 9.5% up to 9.7% of households. In the South and the Northeast, we saw a decline in food insecurity.
Given inflation in 2022, Nye says food insecurity may be increasing.
In the data that was just released, we already see that families that are living in rural areas have a higher rate of food insecurity than those who live in urban areas. Families with children in the household have higher rates of food insecurity, and families with elderly people tend to have a higher rate of food insecurity. So we would expect that, unfortunately, those families that are already struggling with tight finances would see an increased rate of food insecurity with the higher inflation that we're seeing today.
Michael Clements, Washington.
The My Ag Life Daily News Report continues right after this.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns on September 28th and 29th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this two-day conference features two concurrent CE tracks for both PCAs and CCAs.
Earn the DPR and CCA credits you need. Network on our trade show floor and join us in giving away scholarships and honorariums presented by Western Region CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Visit progressivecrop.com/conference.
Up next on the Maya AgLife Daily News Report is Vicki Boyd. She talks about the California Avocado Commission's perspectives of this year's harvest.
Coming off a strong season, California avocado growers are just wrapping up harvest and will likely have produced about 270 million pounds. That's slightly lower than initial crop estimates of about 300 million pounds. Jan DeLizer, California Avocado Commission Vice President of Marketing, attributes some of the change to growers picking smaller fruit because of attractive prices rather than letting it size.
We had actually a pretty darn good crop. We were looking at this year probably shipping, you know, just over 270 million pounds. We're still going in a light way, but it's much lighter than when we were at our peak. But we anticipate a good crop this year, and we had good sizing. We did run to smaller sizes on the Hass variety. There was larger sizes on the Lamb Hass and the Jim variety, but they're lighter volumes. So we saw a lot of bag business, and we saw a lot of 48s and smaller.
The season officially runs from November 1 through the following October 31st, but DeLizer said the core of harvest runs from spring through late summer. One of the season's first promotions is the Super Bowl. Shortly before that event this year, the USDA shut down Mexican shipments for a week to protect USDA inspectors in that country. DeLizer said this resulted in good volumes of California fruit, and that continued throughout much of the summer.
The period of time, if you think back on Super Bowl, there was a period of time where USDA, to protect the inspectors that they had working in Mexico, actually banned avocados from Mexico into the U.S. So there was about a week where there wasn't any supply coming in. Now, generally speaking, retailers front load for an event like Super Bowl. So there was a lot of avocados in the marketplace, but the market was such that it made it attractive for the California grower to go ahead and harvest. After the last couple of years where there was some severe weather in the summer, a lot of the guys or gals that would have held on to fruit actually went in and pulled it a little sooner than they normally would have. So we saw good shipments beginning in February, really, and they carried throughout the summer. We slowed down a little bit, you know, in March, but April, May, June, and July were all very, very good months, as was August for California avocados. The season we generally say is March through September. We time it spring through summer, and summer is ending this week, but it's in late September. So generally speaking, we consider our fruit to be available spring through summer. And sometimes we go a little longer, you know, sometimes we start a little earlier, like this particular year. Based on the district meetings we've had so far, we've got another one tomorrow. We're looking at probably that March through September timing.
The California Avocado Commission targets promotions for certain holidays, including Super Bowl weekend, Cinco de Mayo, Mother's Day, and the 4th of July. This year, DeLizer said they had strong response. It actually lasted clear into Labor Day.
They were good pull events. I think that, you know, the timing on Super Bowl was such that the activity going into the event was well orchestrated and well implemented. And then we had good supplies available for Cinco for the 4th of July and really reasonable supplies through Labor Day.
Commission representatives are currently surveying orchards to determine how they fared during the early September heat wave. DeLizer said they were pleasantly surprised to see the orchards in the south part of the state took the heat in stride. They plan to survey orchards in the more northerly production areas later this week. Based on this, she said they're expecting a crop size in 2023 similar to what they had this year, but a lot can happen between now and harvest next year.
A couple of members of our staff were out in the field last week in the south, and they saw some really good trees and some good production on the trees. So we were pleasantly pleased that it looks as though, at least in the south, they dodged that bullet of the heat spell, that it was an extended period of of heat. And then we did get some moisture at a time of year where we don't normally get it. But so far, I mean, we'll know more in the north this week when we get up there. But basically, things are looking really good for next year. And that's a positive sign. I mean, the board is budgeting for a similar crop to next year, but we'll see. You know, we'll see how things unfold. I tell you, I think there's not a person in agriculture in California, probably throughout the country, that just wouldn't want to see some more moisture. We could use the rain. And then, you know, the cooler temperatures are very beneficial to the crop in the wintertime, but that rain is all important. So we're very much hoping that we see some more moisture come from the sky.
California avocados continue to ride the healthy reputation that avocados in general have gained. The commission's first priority is to promote locally grown fruit, but DeLizer said they also benefit from growth within the entire avocado category.
It's interesting because we represent the California avocado grower. And so we are very, very much about local and telling that story, and the loyal retailers that will price appropriately to carry avocados because they know their consumer is looking for them. But we're also stewards of the category. So we want the category to continue to grow. So we tell the positive story of the health benefits and all of that. But I think, you know, the two things work in conjunction with each other. We've got a very loyal following that is looking for California avocados when we're available, where we're available. And then we've also got this overarching category that continues to grow.
Just talking about California avocados with Jan DeLizer makes me hungry. Pass me the chips and guacamole, please. This is Vicki Boyd reporting for My Ag Life.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.